It's great to see so much interest in local government. This is really wonderful, and I'm excited to get to so many of your questions. This forum has three segments. We will start with introductory statements from the candidates. We will then move to question and answers and close with the candidates' closing statements. Candidates will have 1 minute to respond to each question. We have a wonderful timekeeper here in the front that will help inform them of their time. As moderator, I will do my best to try to ensure candidates have equal opportunities to answer questions, as well as get through as many questions as possible this evening, because I'm already getting lots of questions. With the help of League of Women Voters volunteers, they are helping sort through just to kind of combine some topics so that we can be sure to cover items of great interest. To help get it through as many questions as possible, I ask that the audience hold all applause and verbal reactions until the conclusion of the forum. I also request that the candidates remember this is a forum and not a debate, and so you won't have an opportunity necessarily to follow up directly if you've already answered a question, but take note and maybe you can come back to that on another question. I also want to note Mr. Ritchie had a prior commitment and so is not able to join us this evening. All right, so the candidates have drawn order, so we are going to use that order for the introductory statements. So we will start with Ms. McLean.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for hosting this forum tonight and to everyone for being here and taking the time. I'll jump into why now. I have spent so much time this year listening to people and listening sessions, and I'm hearing the same struggles all over this community. The people are struggling to afford the home they're in or find one that they can afford, to find a job that pays them what they need to be paid in order to live in this city that we all love. I've had over 30 listening sessions this summer and in every neighborhood in there with all kinds of people, and I'm hearing the same things. People are feeling priced out, talked over, left out, and often forgotten by the city that they love so much. We cannot deny the changes of the last 16 years, but our city's at a crossroads, and we have to ask ourselves, are we going to stay a place where we can buy a home, build a life, create opportunity, and expect that our kids and their kids can do the same? You have to ask, is an old style of leadership going to get us to where we need to be as we approach these new challenges? Well, I believe it's time for new ideas and new leadership, someone to urgently jump in and address these challenges. And so I'm so excited to be here tonight to talk about them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nielsen.
I am Courtney Nielsen, and I thank you all for being here tonight. I am a candidate for Boise Mayor, and as a lifelong resident of Boise, I am committed to transparency with its government and its citizens. Transportation is in a desperate need of a commuter train in and out of Boise. On the already available railroad. Wages, it's time for a wage increase in Boise to empower people with higher wages so they can afford their own home and the ability to work and live in Boise. We all want to help Mother Earth, so advocating for a statewide emissions test to clean our air and pool the money together to take care of our roads and highways. As mayor of Boise, I see the next 4 years and as an exciting time for people empowerment, collaboration, inclusion, opportunity, and optimism. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beter.
Well, thank you to the League. You've been there every election and here as well. And we really appreciate all that you do. You know, it's a great time in the city of Boise. We have 15 new parks. We have four new neighborhood libraries, including this one, where we didn't have a single one. We just dedicated our 10th recreation center, this one in the West Ada School District. We had the lowest crime that we've had in decades. We have a clean city, a greener city than we've ever had. But, you know, there's more to do. Our success has made our housing market more difficult because people want to stay here and they want to live here. And we're working hard on affordable housing for those that own and rent. Transportation is always a challenge, especially with a legislature that won't help give us a dedicated funding source. Most of all, though, Boise needs to stay a kind city, a city where we look after each other, where we have the civility and kindness that see us through. That's what separated us, and that's what I want to keep working on.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
Thank you to the League of Women Voters and City Club for hosting this, and thank you all for being here. The fact that it was difficult to park, I knew there were going to be a lot of people here, and I'm excited to see that. I'm Rebecca Arnold, and I'm asking to be your next mayor. I want to change the way Boise is doing business. I want an open and transparent government where ideas and proposals are brought forth to the public in open forums, and we receive public input early in the process and throughout the process in locations that are convenient for citizens to attend instead of expecting everyone to come downtown in order to have access to the city officials. I also want to rein in the out-of-control spending in Boise. I believe that we need to take a hard look at the budget and figure out how to cut the spending and lower property taxes so that all of us can afford to live here and stay in our homes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez.
How's everyone doing tonight? My name is Adriel Martinez. I ran for city council before. Kind of knew what was going to happen 4 years down the road. It's happened exactly kind of how I thought it would. 2 years ago, I was thinking about running for city council again. And I'm here running for mayor because Boise has some issues. Our growth has not been handled well. A lot of people are getting left behind. Parts of the city are getting gentrified. People are getting pushed out of their homes. We have a stagnant economy. We don't have the jobs to support this economy. Our transportation system is lackluster. Our infrastructure was not built to handle all these vehicles and all these people. So I decided to throw my hat in the ring. I don't have corporate donors, anybody donating $1,000 to my campaign. I decided not to raise any money because the people that would give to my campaign, they need the money to pay their bills. So I want everyone to know that they do have a voice in Boise, and I know a lot of people don't think they do. There's a lot of people that live in this area. I'm from this area, and that Albertsons I go to quite a bit. People in this city haven't had a voice, I don't think, for maybe about 10 years, I would say. And I want people to understand that they can have a voice in local politics. The election turnout for and past elections has been pretty low, so I'm hoping that this election is pretty big, and thank you for coming.
Thank you. Mr. Coles?
On July 16th, 2019, I attended the Boise City Council budget hearing. And I attended that hearing for the purpose of trying to encourage the City Council to change their priorities. I thought a $100 million library downtown was excessive. $11 million for a out-of-state architect seemed excessive to me. And just felt there was no reason to move shouldn't move, the Log Cabin Literary Center from the Greenbelt to some other location for a cost of over $600,000. So I came and I'd done some research. I found that the strategic plan for the city of Boise showed that we were 54 police officers short. And that kind of growth that we've had, and to be short those kind of police officers, we had fewer patrol cars than we had in 2014. And I just wanted to encourage the city council to make some changes. And after I sat down, a gentleman stood up and said, you know, I'm being taxed out of my home. He was retired. He's on a set income. And he had planned on living there and continuing to live there for the rest of his life. And he looked at the city council. He said, please, lower our taxes. Stop this excessive spending. And that tugged at my heart. And that's why I'm here.
Great. Thank you very much. We have all sorts of wonderful questions. I think I'll just suggest, you know, we'll kind of go down the line with who starts, if that works for you all. So this first question, we'll start with Ms. Nielsen and then work our way down. What makes you a unique candidate from others in the mayoral election?
People, empowerment, optimism, always seeing the brighter side of things, always looking to include everybody. It's not one way or the other. There's all colors of the rainbow. As you can see, I'm bursting with energy and passion for people. I'm excited. I want to collaborate. I don't have all the answers. That's what it takes, a team, a community, to bring all that to the table. And I'm excited. Let's go Boise.
Mr. Beater?
Could you repeat the question, if you don't mind?
Yeah. Here we go. What makes you a unique candidate from others in the mayoral election?
Well, obviously, I'm the only incumbent mayor in this race. But I'm a lifelong Boisean. My daughter represents the fourth generation of our family that's lived in this city. It's in our DNA. When my parents got married, my dad said my mom told him, "Pat, we can live anywhere you want to live as long as I can see the Boise River from there." We have momentum in the city. We're doing so well. We're a great city, and we can be even greater. And that involves making tough decisions. I've lost friends. I've had arguments all around the city. But I will make the decisions I have, and I will continue to make decisions that will set us up for the long run for my daughter and for her children and your children and their children. That's what this is about, and that's why I want to continue to do this, because the future is tough and the decisions are hard. And we're doing so well, and we can do even better in the future.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I skipped Ms. McClain.
I'd say I'm a unique candidate because I come to this with a wonder and love of the city that really in many ways comes with finding it as a kid just out of college, as a newlywed with my husband, and feeling blessed every day to have been so lucky to have found Boise, and feeling obligated to work with her people, to talk and think about the future, and to bring impact to the community that's wrapped her arms around me in the way she's wrapped her arms around so many of us. This is a really urgent time for our community. Like I said, we're at a crossroads, and we need a new generation of leaders, new ideas, and an urgency, a sense of urgency, that we have much to do to protect this place that we all love so deeply, that has given us so much. I bring that with me every day. Every morning I wake up, when I run in the foothills, and I'll bring that sense of urgency and love of place to the mayor's office.
Ms. Arnold?
Thank you. I'm a practicing attorney. I'm a former CPA, and I also have a master's degree in business administration. I think that educational background coupled with 30 years of success in the business world and 15 years in local government uniquely qualifies me to understand budgets and understand how the city should be run and how we should spend our dollars effectively without overtaxing our citizens. I've also been a community volunteer for more than 30 years. I love this community. I put my heart into this community, and I put my time into serving the community because that's very important to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez.
I'm very unique because I am a combat veteran. I'm the only millennial running. I think the only Boise State graduate running. I'm definitely from here. I'm a hometown person. I've been here almost 30 years. I started from the bottom. You know, I didn't have any wealthy parents or a family that, you know, had connections in Boise. So I've earned everything. You know, it's been tough. I grew up in foster care. My life was pretty rough, but it made me who I am today. And, you know, I got into politics, I'd say, when I was 17, to be honest. And I've learned a lot in the last 12 years. Going to Boise State, I've had some internships. When I ran for city council, I learned a lot about local elections. I used to be a federal guy, and I believed in the national government because it's very strong. It can do its job, but right now, unfortunately, it's not. So I know that the local government can have a great impact on people's lives, more than people think. And I'm hoping that during this election, more people turn out to vote than previous elections. And I know that I have what it takes. I have the background. You can look up my resume. And I can get it done for Boise for the future.
Thank you, Mr. Coles.
In 1980, I returned to Boise after having gone to school in California, earning my master's degree in public administration. I worked for the city of Long Beach. I worked for the city of Artesia. I worked in their planning departments, community development departments. There, I worked as an assistant to a city manager. When I came here in 1980, I was hired as a city planner, and I worked for 3 years in that planning department, looking at every development proposal, working with the planning director, who was a strategic planner, And I think I'm uniquely qualified just from that point of view that we need planning for the city of Boise. We need a strategic planning for the city of Boise. Currently, our planning director is a developer. We need a strategic planner, comprehensive planner for the city of Boise. That's a change I would make immediately. I spent 10 years on the city council and then 10 years as mayor. While I was mayor, we were hiring 10 police officers a year. We were behind. Now those officers, many of them now, are up for retirement. So if we're 54 police officers short, and we have officers that may be retiring at whatever numbers those may be, maybe 10 a year, how are we going to keep up? How are we going to take care of our neighborhoods and our communities?
All right. Thank you. So this time, yeah, we're going to start with Mr. Beter and then kind of work our way around just so that we kind of rotate who we're starting with so everyone gets a shot at getting to go first. So this question is, what is your plan to ensure there's affordable and accessible housing in Boise?
Well, like I said before, we've been so successful that puts a squeeze on our housing market. Never forget what a mayor told me from another city. He said, we have affordable housing. We also have really high crime and really high unemployment. So it's success that gives you a market that's tight. And we're looking at everything from a housing trust for the city of Boise, where the city buys land and develops that into affordable housing, to accessory dwelling units where we can have more units be on one lot. We've already passed that, and it's going to help. All manner of things to help this. It's a big lift. We have a meeting with the financial community to look at new vehicles for lending, and they need to ante into this because they've enjoyed this market, and they need to help us out. So we're going to look across every opportunity, and we're going to improve housing. That's a big part of it. So people have a place to live.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold.
Thank you. I believe that we need to cut some of the red tape and allow easier building permit process. I think accessory dwelling units are important. I do not, however, agree that the city of Boise should be buying land and building houses. That takes property off the tax rolls, and it just spreads the tax to somebody else. I also don't think it's the city's function to be a landlord. It adds a layer of government and expertise that we don't have and don't need. I think we need to leave housing to the private sector. I think keeping property taxes low helps with affordability, because if you're a renter and the property taxes continue to go up and up and up as they have every year in Boise, those costs are passed on to the tenants. And it looks like I'm about out of time, so we'll stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez.
So part of the problem is right now the city is approving too many single family attached homes that are expensive that nobody can afford, except for people that are out of state. And so we have to focus on density, so apartments, condos, duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, stuff like that, where we can have people being able to afford places on their own, not necessarily, you know, renting, obviously, because the city has grown far too big to keep building. You know, the suburban sprawl is costing people. I don't know if anybody lives out by Lake Hazel and Five Mile area. Out there, it sucks to drive around because there's so many people, and the housing is expensive. And part of that is I've talked to a lot of people about the Boise Ada Greater Housing Authority, and there's some stuff that the city can do with property swapping, where the organization uses federal money basically to update infrastructure on old apartments and buildings they can get from the city property that the city owns, and then they can upgrade the infrastructure and then basically give it right back to the city. It's like a, you know, one-for-one swap. That's the stuff that we have to do for the future to make housing affordable.
Thank you, Mr. Coles.
Back in the 90s when I was mayor of the city of Boise, I found myself in the Oval Office with President Clinton, and a year later in the Oval Office with George W. Bush. In each case, I was there to plead the cause and the case for housing and urban development and for the opportunity to have the kind of grants that we could use. These are federal dollars, but we're paying them, and we could use those dollars to come back to the city of Boise. In one case, and I was pleading the cause for Section 8 housing, affordable housing, and we partnered with a developer, and we built Oak Park, which is on Vista Avenue, over 300 units, and they're very desirable units. But the idea is that we can partner. We use Section 8 housing, and we need to have a good relationship with the Secretary of the Housing of Interior.
Thank you,
Housing and Urban Development. Thank you.
Sorry. Ms. McLean?
Thanks. Affordable housing is one of those top issues of the election, really. As I've heard from people all around the city, I hear from people on fixed incomes concerned they're not going to be able to stay in the home they've always lived in. I had a mom whose daughter lives in Denver tell me that her daughter can't come home because she can't find a job that pays enough to be able to live here in the neighborhoods that she grew up in and start a family close to her parents. We have to do more and better than we're doing right now. As a council member, I've sponsored a look at that housing land trust, and I believe it should be outside of the city, so it transcends administrations, and we can create opportunities for housing in neighborhoods where people of all different incomes live together. I've been working with a team of affordable housing experts that say we need to do more and better on accessory dwelling units to really make them incentivize when people commit to rent them at affordable rates. And I'm going to start saying why not and asking the questions rather than settling for we can't. And we'll name a housing task force that will look at all of the tools that have worked in other places, the things we've said we couldn't do, and determine what we can and ought to do. Because making sure that we have housing for everyone that works in this community is paramount to having a vibrant community in the long run.
Thank you, Ms. Nielsen.
I don't see this as a housing crisis. I see it as a wage increase opportunity to empower companies. Since Boise is such a success, we can invite companies like Gravity Payments, Dan Price, who just increased his employees' beautiful livable wage, and that's a reflection on Boise. So inviting companies that believe in empowerment for their employees and want to pay better wages, so there's nothing worse than being poor and not, you know, having the government go, oh, like they can't take care of themselves, they're poor. Well, it's because the wage is $7.25. So I see that as not flattering as a reflection of Boise. We can do better than that.
All right. We will start with Ms. Arnold this time. Do you support an F-35 mission for Boise? And how does that fit with keeping Boise the most livable city?
I support our military wholeheartedly, and I support having a mission at Gowan Field. However, I do not support the F-35. We've seen the environmental impact study, and we know that it's going to make homes uninhabitable. It's going to affect school children, and I just don't think the costs outweigh any benefits. So, no, I'm not in favor of the F-35.
Mr. Martinez?
As an expert on the military stuff, I can tell you that I do support the F-35s. It's money that we will need in the future. But at that same point, we need to understand that it needs to be transparent. We can't have these closed-door meetings, you know, between the military-industrial complex and local leaders, the governor, everybody's involved. It shouldn't be happening like that. And as a military man, I understand that people have concerns, and you know, I support their concerns just because I was in the military and it doesn't bother me even living over there. And I work at the airport, so my hearing is, you know, it's getting worse. But I think that it's crucial that we upgrade the infrastructure of our airport first off, because our airport is lackluster at what it's at right now, the current capacity. And we should upgrade the infrastructure before we even talk about F-35s, because we're not going to get picked. You know, I know a lot of people that know the inside scoop on this, and there's a lot of other bigger airports that are way nicer that it's going to get picked before us. So,
Mr. Coles?
Yeah, we may or may not get picked, but the idea of having a mission here in the city of Boise is important to our community, I believe. And the F-35 mission is the next mission, and it would be for years to come. I support the mission. I support the opportunity for our Adjutant General to be in charge of that mission. He's appointed by the governor. The mission will be controlled by him. The training times and hours will be controlled by him. Currently, we have military aircraft flying into the city of Boise. Many of those are Navy aircraft that are coming in. They're very noisy. We have no control over those. But the Adjutant General would have control over the mission, when they fly, and what they're doing. So with that, also the FAA came in 2015 and recommended that we have a citizens committee that receives all noise complaints. I would put that into place immediately. So we would have the community, the citizens. Those complaints would go to the Adjutant General. They would also go to the airport board and to the mayor and council. We would do all we can to reduce the noise impact from the F-35 mission.
Ms. McLean?
I do not support having F-35s as part of the mission here in Boise. About a year and a half ago, I went and listened to these airplanes as they took off, and they were loud. I mean, they're just loud. And I didn't know anything about the decibels or anything else. I just knew that they were loud, and I said I would wait until we heard and learned from the environmental impact statement what impact they would have on our community. Came out about a month or two ago, and it was clear. Almost 300 homes would be impacted, and those are homes lived in by Boiseans that have been paid off, that are affordable, that we need in this housing crunch. Oahe school kids would be impacted by this mission. I stand with the school district in saying it's not right for our kids. So when we think about how we grow a mission and support the military, there are incredible things happening at Gowan Field. There's a regional training center. There are planes there right now. I support the mission and will work with them to expand and believe it's not necessary to have F-35s as part of that in our future.
Ms. Nielsen?
I do not support the F-35s. I'm going to choose people over profit on this one, and I think they'd be a great asset for Mountain Home Air Force Base.
All right, Mr. Beter?
Well, the Idaho Air National Guard is one of the most important economic presence in the in our city and in our area. It represents 3,000 direct and indirect jobs and over $160 million of economic activity. To say you support the Guard and don't support a mission is having your cake and eating it too. We've had eight missions at our Air Guard dating back to when Jimmy Stewart trained at Gowan Field to fly in World War II. It is an essential part of our community, and I don't know what the next mission is, but we've kept the A-10 here thanks to our efforts and the efforts of many around the country. The A-10 is still here. It was going to be gone in 2014. If we lose a mission, we lose the Guard, and we lose all that activity. I'm not sure what the next mission is. If it's the F-35, we're going to make sure that it complies with the narrowest runway pattern and that it makes the least effect on our community. My roots in this community are so deep, we will make sure that it works, but we need that next mission.
You are listening to a City Club of Boise and League of Women Voters Forum featuring the candidates for Boise Mayor. Right, this time we will start with Mr. Martinez. If elected mayor, what is your plan for improving public transit in the short and long term? Specifically, is there a light rail or commuter train part of your plan or vision? And if so, how will we pay for it?
So the pay for it part is what's tough because our state legislature is, it's almost like they're living in a territorial days with some of their decisions. We have to understand that right now our busing system is inadequate for the size of the city. And we have to, the short term is we have to immediately go Monday through Saturday, 24/7. Obviously at night, the routes are gonna be a little different. It's not gonna be every bus, you know, it'll be like 25% of the buses going on main routes. So that's, those buses will fill up. There's a lot of people out there in the retail community, servers, hosters, people like that who right now they can't get home at night because the buses don't run late enough. So, and part of that is I definitely would end the partnership with Valley Ride. I think when the city ran the buses, you know, it was a little bit better and things were done better, and that's actually jobs for our city. So we can contract out with the other cities because they barely pay anything as it is. But for the long term, light rail, 100% from Caldwell to Boise, and we'll have to figure something out because, once again, the state legislature, ACHD, Compass, Meridian, Caldwell, Napa, everybody. So that's a hard one, and nobody here can fix that, like, as it is now. So.
Mr. Coles?
Well, in I think it was the 2000, we brought the Regio Sprinter, which was built by Siemens. It was a German train, and it ran on the rails. We ran it from Nampa to Boise. Micron used it. It was an awesome experience. Over 10,000 people rode that, maybe more in about a 10-day period. I would definitely promote moving forward with that. That was years ago, 19 years ago. Let's use those rails. That's what they're for. The idea of when we purchased the train depot was that in the future it would be a depot again. The current bus system, I don't know if there's any more buses that were here than 16 years ago when I left office. I mean, we need more buses, more routes. And if we took the $650,000 that are budgeted for to move the log cabin and take $600,000 that's being used to study whether or not to put a train downtown, there's over $1 million. We could have everybody riding the buses for free. We could have more buses, people ride them for free. Let's encourage people to use them more hours. I am all for a great livable city would have a really great transit system.
Ms. McLean?
We're 20 years behind on a regional transportation system, and it's absolutely imperative in the next 4 years that we move forward with, at the very least, an actionable plan that will include trains and trams and buses and bikes, the pathways for them, because every person we get off the roads makes it that much easier for the people that have to use the roads, protects our air quality, makes it cheaper to get from home to work, and opens up a whole bunch of places, neighborhoods and communities with housing that's more affordable. I believe that after 16 years of asking for the one tool that we all know we need, the local option tax, that if we got it tomorrow, the two counties wouldn't agree that we are going to use it all in transit. And we have to have a regional approach to this. So we build the relationships. We get leaders at the top agreeing on the vision of what it looks like to move our people from their homes and communities into the jobs where they work. And then, as a whole region, it becomes even more possible that we can partner with the state to fund it and get it done.
Ms. Nielsen?
Yes, a huge fan of the commuter train in and out of Boise. I drive 1,600 miles a month, and I'm always going the opposite way and seeing the commuter and the congestion. Huge advocate for the railroad. What a beautiful asset. What an amazing resource. I mean, and you could even take it to McCall, forget Highway 55, enjoy. And since the city is sitting on $50 million in cash for a maybe library, that's a beautiful down payment. And working with other counties, I work in Fruitland, I work in Payette, I've already have these relationships from Vail to Mountain Home, and it's like amazing what we could do together. So huge fan of the commuter train and the beautiful Boise Train Depot with the koi ponds, and the pump's gone out twice this year in the koi ponds, and I mean, the train depot is such an asset, and it's going to be alive again. I'm so excited.
Mr. Beeder?
Well, I'm really pleased to go last on this question, just coincidentally, because Lauren, the first Valley Regional Transit meeting you attended in 10 years was 2 months ago. Elaine Clegg and I have been slogging away, and people know that. We've been slogging away. I'm the only elected official that's ever taken transit to a Valley Regional Transit meeting, and it was hard. I'll tell you that. You know, there's an old blues song. I have a brother-in-law who's a blues singer, and the chorus goes, "Romance without finance is a nuisance." You know, would we want light rail across the valley? Of course we want it. We don't have a funding source for that, folks. I'd like to be taller. I'm not going to be taller anytime soon. If we don't get a funding source that's other than the general fund, which are your taxpayers, your property taxes, we're not going to have a much better system. I've been beating my head against the legislature, which I'm pretty good at doing that. And someday we're going to get that. And the more you help us do that, we'll do it. But until then, don't promise. Thank you, Brent Coles. You ran a train around the tracks that you had no idea how you could do. We want that. We need a funding source. We need to get that from the legislature and pass it through our citizens.
Ms. Arnold?
Thank you for not forgetting me. I have a lot to say on this topic, so I'm going to try to talk fast. With regard to the bus system, we've been doing the same thing over and over and over again, and it isn't working. The dollars spent have gone up. Ridership has gone down. So we have to look at a different model. And I don't pretend to know exactly what that is, but I think we're going to have to figure out a different model so that we have buses running more often and later hours so that they're convenient to use in order to encourage people to use them. I lived in Nashville, Tennessee for 3 years. I rode the bus. It was wonderful. With regard to light rail, that's a complicated issue. In discussions with Union Pacific over the years and discussions with people who are in the know, there is a possibility of getting light rail from Nampa to Boise because that's a spur line. It's not heavily used for freight. From Caldwell to Boise would be more difficult because that's a main line from Boise to Nampa and then around the city of Boise. It is heavily used for freight. And Union Pacific's concern with that is that you have to have separation in passenger and freight use. As far as funding, beating up on the legislature really doesn't work. Instead of viewing the legislature as the enemy, we have to view them as people who work for us, and we have to be able to sit down with them and say, okay, here are the problems we're facing. What are your ideas for helping us solve those for your constituents and ours? I have a good relationship with the legislature, so I can have those conversations because I don't view them as the enemy.
Great. We'll begin with Mr. Coles, and I think that question feeds into this question nicely. Are you in favor of Boise seeking a local option sales tax?
Yes, certainly. Again, if we're building a $100 million library in downtown Boise, the legislators that come into town, there are over 200 cities with less than 10,000 people in them. Well, they come in and they see something like that or hear about projects like that. They just turn a deaf ear to us. They're like, oh, you got plenty of money. You're up here asking for a local option tax? Oh, my gosh, you're the capital city. You're flush. So we have to tighten our belt. We have to show that we're using our dollars very appropriately and not outlandishly. And then we go up to the legislature and we talk to the committee chairs. We work with them. And it takes years of developing those kind of relationships. But we show them we're doing everything we can. We've done all we can with the bus system, and now we need a local option tax. So that's how we get it done.
Ms. McLean?
I am in favor of having the right to have a local option tax, and every community in the state, and particularly in this region, needs that tool to be able to provide for projects that are important. And that is a perfect way to fund transportation when we get to the point where we're ready with a shared vision. And we have to be able to deploy it as soon as we're able to work with the legislature and convince them to partner with us and provide us that opportunity to have a local option tax.
Ms. Nielsen?
Absolutely, but from what I'm hearing, it sounds like, I am naive because I am new at this, but it sounds like we need to make friends with the legislature. So I think that's a good place to start. So thank you.
Mr. Beter?
You know, we have a local option sales tax, and the only cities that have it are resort cities. It's I think there are 6 or 8 cities around the state that already have it and have passed it. Ketchum, I think Bellevue did, McCall. Why should it be limited to resort cities? That's the issue. We already have it. Why don't we expand it to every city? You're in charge of whether you vote for it or not. You're going to tell us I want this or not. I think it ought to be a 50% threshold. The statistics I've seen, people are for it statewide, and they'll decide whether they want to pass an individual initiative. Every year before the legislature, I meet with the Speaker of the House, and we talk about this issue, and we're getting close to something that we can live with. It may take an initiative. We've done that with the Medicaid expansion. If they don't foul up all the rules, we may have a shot to do it that way. But you simply have to have a funding source that's other than the property tax, or you're not going to have a really good transportation system. We're close. I think we can get there.
Ms. Arnold?
Thank you. I do think we need to have the conversation with the legislature about local option tax and how it should be structured. And I think I can have that conversation because I have a good relationship with leadership in the legislature. I do think, though, we need to include in that conversation other options for funding the things that we need. We also need to be able to go to the legislature and say, we are being frugal with the money that we have. When they look at the fact that Boise has a $52 million slush fund for a library and all of the spending on the downtown commuter rail or the downtown circulator rail car that no one wants except the mayor, and continued spending on those kinds of things, it does not bode well to go to the legislature and say, we want an opportunity to get more money. We can't do that unless we are being frugal with the money we have.
Mr. Martinez?
So I'm going to preface my support of it, and I do support the local option tax. It's much needed. So Idaho is what you call a down-law state. What that means is our state legislature has basically authoritarian power over the local municipalities. And it's funny because they complain about the federal government overreach, but so they need to understand that they need to give us more power. And part of that is I've been around the country and I've lived in other cities temporarily to work and see family and stuff. And Cleveland, Ohio, for instance, Ohio has city charters that are basically like small constitutions that they sign with the state government. So we need that in Idaho so our cities are not, you know, we don't have one hand tied behind our back, because that's what's happening with the mayor. And, you know, he might not admit it here, but that's true. You know, that's the truth. And so we have to have the legislature understand that Boise is urban. We're not, you know, rural Idaho. We're very different. It's a state of Ada. Some people say it's very different here than northern Idaho or eastern Idaho. So, but I do support the local sales tax. It will help.
All right. We will start now with Ms. McLean. With new development, how do you respect the history and character of all neighborhoods in Boise and ensure those are not lost through growth and large subdivision projects?
That is an issue that I grapple with almost every week as a city council person, because our city is growing and we will continue to grow. And I often think that as we grow up, we really will have to grow up because we have to provide housing. But we want to protect the character of neighborhoods that we have and create open spaces so that people can recreate and gather together. And so I believe it's really important that we use every tool possible to have that conversation about what came before us, what we expect will come ahead of us, and what we need to do right now. And to recognize that while there's urgency in this moment around affordability and housing for people, we also are trying so hard to protect what's most important about our city. As a council member, I've always tried hard to ensure that when we can, that we ask for and require open space. In a recent development, we've had that conversation about the protection of farmland and open spaces. In design, people scale design and ensuring that people of all income levels can live together to create strong neighborhoods where people have access to walkable access to schools and shops and places to work and enjoy each other. All of those things factor in to design decisions that we have weekly and that we have to continue to have as a community as we continue to grow.
Thank you, Ms. Nielsen.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Yeah. With new development, how do you respect the history and character of all neighborhoods in Boise and ensure those are not lost through growth and large subdivision projects?
Wow. Being born and raised here, I've seen, wow. State Street in Glenwood used to be a four-way stop sign, and that was, there. We didn't even know what Walmart was and Starbucks, and I've seen amazing things. So balance. My family lives over off of Bogart, and I just pray that they, like, don't sell their, don't, I mean, it comes down to the homeowner. They have the right to sell their land, and they have the right to do and design, but it's like, it breaks my heart, because I've seen a lot. So balance, you have to have community effort. The other side of my family has the Chaussee Swan development over on 27th and Stewart, and he went out and approached the community and got nothing but love and respect. I mean, there was a couple naysayers, but I mean, he had the neighborhood association, he had the character, the design, and he worked with the neighborhood to create something wonderful. And I think that that helps when a developer wants the community input. So balance, you know, conversation.
Mr. Beter?
Well, this is a tough issue, an important issue. You know, people hate sprawl, and you should hate sprawl. Sprawl is the enemy of cities. But the only thing that people hate worse than sprawl is density. And density is what we need to be able to go forward. I'm really proud of what we've accomplished in the last 10 years because we've begun to see a different development pattern that's more compact, that's more mixed use, and that's more multifamily and other options for homeowners. Not everybody wants to live in a single family detached house. We need to make those available as well. But I'm really proud of how we've gone about it. But there are tough decisions here. You know, you can't have it all ways. We had a development just last week off on Hill Road, contentious one. But I'm really pleased that we found a real sweet spot there where development is allowed and open space is dedicated as well. These are tough decisions. We can make them. I'm really pretty optimistic that we're getting there. We also have new greenfield developments in the southeast of Boise and in the south and southwest that if we do it like Harris Ranch and do it well, we can have new development that really works with the city of Boise.
Ms. Arnold?
It's a tough question because you have to balance private property rights of a developer that's coming in with a new development, but you also have to look at the rights of the existing neighborhood. And you have to find ways to make it compatible with the existing neighborhoods. I don't think that's being done. I think the city has been just routinely upzoning things just because they've never met a high-density project they didn't like. And in some cases, I had a conversation with an architect who's working on putting a development together. The landowner wants 800 units, and they are being pressured by the city to increase that to 1,200 units. It hasn't even come before the city as a project yet, but there are these discussions that are being held out of the public eye to try to pressure that developer into increasing the density by 50%. I know when that hits the public and the neighborhoods, they're not going to like that, and I don't blame them. So I think we have to look at balancing the old with the new and working with the neighborhoods to make new developments compatible and not just saying, oh, we got to have density here because we got to have more houses.
Mr. Martinez?
So I have a minor in history and I love history. And I know that Boise has changed a lot in my lifetime. And stuff like that happened to the Roosevelt Market. I won't let that stuff happen. I'm not going to sell out to any developers. And so we have to understand that, you know, suburban sprawl is bad. But density, that's the future. If you look at cities like Atlanta, they're having an urban resurgence. Younger people are moving into the city, and it's actually cheaper to live there. So we have to look at other states and even other countries and see how we can make this work. Obviously, our state legislature, it's going to be hard. But, you know, Boise has a rich history, or at least we did. And, you know, we have to understand that we just can't keep building all these houses that nobody can afford to live in. That, you know, I make almost $4,000 a month. I can't afford to live in Boise. You know, I rent. And it's kind of sad what's happened. And a lot of it's, you know, the business, the backroom deals, the developers. And I'm not anti-business, you know, but we have to make them understand that they work for us, you know, and we can't let them cash out on the people's whim. And so I definitely support history, though.
Mr. Coles?
After living on the bench up here for 30 years, I moved 10 years ago to the Northwest neighborhood. And that's the project that was approved just over a week ago. And the neighborhood was very well organized and talked about their heritage and their history and infrastructure. No fire department exists over there. There's very little transit. There's no transit, no buses on Hill Road. And the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended denial. When it got to the city council, it was approved. So that neighborhood feels like they really weren't heard. It was changed. There were some changes made, and they acknowledged that. But it's very difficult. Those are difficult decisions. But when a Planning and Zoning Commission recommends denial and then the city council approves it, the neighborhood feels excluded. And so that's where a lot of work has to be done. And I believe the neighborhoods are really well organized. I support the neighborhoods associations. It's really important that they provide their history and then bring that history to the city council and that they be heard.
All right. This time we'll start with Ms. Nielsen. We're getting a lot of questions about housing affordability and homelessness. So what plans do you have for helping ending homelessness and addressing housing insecurity in the city?
Homelessness. I can speak from experience. Homelessness is a choice. It's because of mental health, drug addiction, abuse, and there are so many. There is not one answer for homelessness. There's so many, there's so many advocates out there wanting to help the homeless. There is at least 50. You Google Boise homeless advocates. I mean, they are everywhere. People want to help the homeless. The reason they are out there is because of a choice. And I can say that because I can speak from experience. So I don't know I think maybe mental health, the Boise's outlook on arresting the homeless or something like that was that an option for people? And I thought that, well, if they're going to arrest the homeless, maybe it's the beginning. It's the end to a new beginning. They can get counseling, hypnotherapy. They can get some form of direction into bettering themselves and self-empowerment. Because I don't have all the answers, but I know that it takes a community to get everything done.
Mr. Beter?
This is the toughest issue that cities deal with all around the country and really around the world. And we've made incredible progress. We have Allenbaugh House Community Detox Center. Half the patients in that facility are homeless, and it's a route for them to go and get out. Here's what works is housing first. Put people in a stable home, and then you can go to, if you combine that with services, you can help them get out of homelessness. New Path Community Development, 45 units on Fairview, is doing incredible things for the chronically homeless. We dedicated a 25-unit veterans housing development that we're gonna open in just a few months. That's what works is housing first. But what doesn't work, are camps. What doesn't work is camping. Cities around the country are understanding that you can't allow camps because it's unsafe, it's unsanitary. And we have our own, unfortunately, very practical situation at Cooper Court. We had a homicide. We had people preying on the homeless. We had drug needles, and we had to bring in the hazmat crew to take that down. We need to keep camping. We've only cited very rarely, only 17 times last year. We need to keep that ability while we go to work on other projects like we're doing that really work.
All right, Ms. Arnold.
Thank you. I do think it's a tough issue. I think instead of just focusing on warehousing people, we have to look at the causes for homelessness. Mental health and drug addiction are two of the main causes. And we have to figure out, okay, how do we provide treatment for those issues, working with the state, to come up with solutions to help people overcome those challenges and help them get on their feet. Help them with a hand up, not a hand out. And I think that's the approach that we have to take. The shelters, the nonprofit shelters, have been great. I think they are helping tremendously. But I do think we have to do more with treating the underlying causes of homelessness.
Mr. Martinez?
So first off, the anti-camping ordinance, I'll get rid of that right off the bat. These people aren't camping. They live on the streets. They're protected under the Constitution. I mean, where else are they going to sleep? That's public land. And the courts will side with that all day. I know constitutional law. So all that money that we wasted on that, we could have fed them and gave them hygiene products and did workshop seminars so they could get jobs, resume building. Think about that. So we have to end this war on homelessness, you know, in Boise. It's not that big of a problem here compared to Portland or Denver, obviously. But we have to let them know that we don't hate them and, you know, think that they're lesser than us. I know a lot of combat vets out there that have a lot of issues. They've been deployed. You know, they can't get jobs. You know, these people were like, you know, they could be one incident away from killing themselves. There's a lot of veterans that kill themselves every day, 23 plus. So we have to look at the mental health, the drug addiction, and we can't be arresting these people. Our jail's full of nonviolent offenders. I mean, a lot of them, you know, sometimes they want to go there because it's warm. So we have to look at that and the money we're wasting on the jail, you know, arresting people that don't need to be arrested. There's a lot of money that can be saved, and I will do that. I'll save us money.
Mr. Coles?
I think there may be others here today that felt like me at times when you're only one house payment away or one job loss away from losing your home. And I've been there. And you feel like you may become homeless, and if you do, what resources are going to be available to you? And gratefully, we live in an awesome, wonderful community with a lot of nonprofit organizations that are very supportive. I support the New Path. That's a great opportunity to build some housing and different organizations and community organizations coming together to build that. We built one similar to that. It's called Community House, and it housed single men, single women, and families. So I believe in supporting those kinds of projects, recognizing that there are people who have all kinds of issues that create that homelessness, and supporting the organizations that can help them, give them a hand up. We do that well in Boise. I would not support spending $200,000 or $300,000 on a lawsuit on that appeal. We can use that money to support and help and do things for the homeless.
Ms. McLean?
We have to address both homelessness and affordable housing because in many ways right now, at least in our community, they're tied. City has created, since Cooper Court, great permanent supportive housing solutions with New Path and the Veterans One that we broke ground on. We can do more of that, and we have to. We need to connect services and work with every shelter that's out there that has alternative ideas to ticketing, to connect services to folks that are experiencing homelessness to help them get ready to walk into a shelter to sleep or into a home when we can provide them one with wraparound services. And we have to, at the same time, address affordable housing because people are being evicted from their apartments because they can't pay the rents when they rise. And then we have more people in our community that are experiencing homelessness. And imagine those families when they get to that point when they walk out of their car and they have to walk into a shelter. That is what we have to prevent if we want to really address this issue. Too often we use the fear of camps to think that we need to take punitive action. In 2014, I voted against ticketing the homeless because I do not see how putting people that are in dire economic situations into the criminal justice system helps them improve their situation. I believe that we can do better and we can do more, and we have to address both those already experiencing homelessness and those that are so close to experiencing it that are members of our community, keep them off of the street.
Right. Again, I would like to remind our digital listeners that you are listening to a City Club of Boise and League of Women Voters Forum featuring the candidates for Boise Mayor. Right. We will start with Mr. Beter. What is your position on the citizens' initiatives on the ballot as Propositions 1 and 2?
Quickly, I want to reach back on the homeless issue. You know, Brent, Community House failed. 200 people would have been turned out to the street because they didn't have the funding to sustain it. And if we allow camps, there's cities all around the country. Vancouver, Washington just repealed their camping ordinance. Within weeks, 150 people were camping, and everybody said, who thinks this was a good idea? So I want to understand, we have to keep that ability to move that along and not allow that. You know, your question is a good one. I believe in the right of people to through initiative to access their government. These two initiatives, unfortunately, are really poorly positioned. They're unconstitutional. There's a difference between an ordinance, which is a legislative issue, which people have a right to do by initiative, and an administrative issue, which is a budget issue, which are these issues that the initiatives are trying to affect. We tried mightily to try to get the library on the ballot with an up or down vote, because the initiatives are a vote to vote, and people don't have any idea what they're voting for. Unfortunately, the county clerk said you can't do that. We can't put it on the ballot. While I believe in the right, these two initiatives are poorly positioned, and I think they ought not to go forward. I understand what's bringing that about, but we have to do it in the right way. And let elected officials make decisions. If you don't like those decisions, you have an ability to affect them.
Ms. Arnold?
I do support the right of citizens to put initiatives on the ballot, and I support the right of the citizens to vote on large, out of the ordinary projects. The city, I think, worked pretty hard to find ways around that and avoid having a vote on the Taj Mahal library that's been proposed. And I think that's wrong. It's not something that we need. It's a vanity project. The stadium is the same thing. Those types of projects should go to the public for a vote.
Mr. Martinez?
So I support both of them. I think that, you know, we're a populist, Western populist state, and we have ballot propositions for a reason. The city seen the overwhelming support of them, so they should have just shut it down and save money. We can bring it up in the future, but I think, in my opinion, the people out there, they would overwhelmingly support voting yes, you know, and then obviously voting them down. So we don't have that kind of money right now. We have other issues that are a little bit more important, and that library looks nothing like Boise. The stadium, you know, it's not going to sell out. I mean, it might sell out during the Bass Friendly, but it's not going to bring any jobs. It's going to end up like a ghost town stadium. You know, they're all over the country that were public funded, and, you know, I guess we could have homeless people live there, you know, but that's what would happen. So I definitely support them. The people need to have their voice heard. And that's what's great about the West Coast is we have, you know, California is really good at it. They do them all the time. And so we have to understand that, especially with this issue, overwhelmingly, I mean, certain areas of the city might support the library and stadium, but the rest of the city, the majority do not. And I know this because I know those people. You know, I've been in Boise a long time. I know people everywhere, left, right, up and down. So,
Mr. Coles?
I vote yes on Proposition 1 and on Proposition 2. There, I met with the attorney. He was at a meeting the other night, and I asked him clearly, are these constitutional or not? He's very bright, and he has written these. They are constitutional. They'll pass muster. If they don't, then okay. But why would the city of Boise fund a lawsuit against something that the people had gone out and written with the cooperation of a city attorney? It's my understanding they worked together, asked him a lot of questions. He clearly knows the difference between administrative and legislative. So I don't understand, Mr. Mayor, while you were out trying to stop us from acquiring the signatures for our initiative. This was the people out there. They just wanted to be heard. And yet you were funding suppression. I don't understand that. I don't get it. And I don't know why you would say before this has even gone to vote that you would file a lawsuit.
Ms. McLean?
So this is one of those questions where I have the elected official answer related to supporting ballot measures and the citizen answer related to how I vote. I said as soon as the ballot measures were filed that it was important to me that we not monkey with the process. I've led ballot measures on issues that are really important to me, like school funding, the open space levy. I've supported others like Medicaid. I know what it's like when an elected official attempts to thwart your constitutionally protected efforts of getting something on the ballot and then passing that. And so because of that, I support the effort and wanted to see it through. As a citizen, I'm going to vote no on the measures. And the reason I'm going to vote no is because I believe that libraries are core services of the city and that we need to make those decisions. That said, so much has happened around this library that I imagine we'll have another question on that. And it's important to get a library done. It needs to be a library that everyone celebrates. If the ballot measures pass, so back to my elected official piece, if the ballot measures pass, we'll move forward, respect that, and if we need to determine whether or not it's constitutional, that's for the courts to do, not attorneys outside a court setting or elected officials that might disagree with the topic of the ballot measure.
Ms. Nielsen?
Could you please restate the question?
What is your position on the citizens' initiatives on the ballot as Propositions 1 and 2?
Okay. I'm for the community having a vote on... I'm absolutely for the community having a vote on the stadium and the library. And I'm not for the stadium and I am not for the library. So thank you.
All right. Next question, we'll start with Ms. Arnold. The city has much room for improvement with engaging vulnerable communities, including low income and people of color. How would you as mayor engage these segments of the community?
Well, I think you have to include them in the discussions and make sure that they're invited to open forums. I think we haven't made any effort, the city hasn't made any effort to take meetings out into the community, to take open houses out into the community, to make it easy for not only the groups that you mentioned to attend, but others as well. I would like to see open houses and city council meetings held on the bench in West Boise, in Northwest Boise. I think there are facilities that are available to do that. So I think you take the elected officials and take the process to the people.
Mr. Martinez?
So I'll just start off by thanking the mayor. He's done a good job at this. You know, I know a lot of people here getting a little anxious and this and that, but the mayor's done a good job. I voted for him in the past. So, you know, he recently had some program with Chief Bones. I don't know if it's going to continue, but my aunt was involved in it where they had, it was kind of community meetings where they talked to people from different segments of different ethnic groups or backgrounds. And they wanted to understand kind of why people were scared of the police and how we can better serve them, because a lot of them are. Because, you know, the Boise police can be a little rough. I mean, even with me, you know. But they have to understand that it's customer service and they need their public servants. So we have to understand that these people, you know, Boise is mostly ethnically Caucasian. So those, that small community, a lot of them, they don't feel in the loop and they're scared. So we have to let them understand that, you know, because Boise is kind. But I'm not going to spend any money telling people that we don't need to. That's a waste of money. But we have to understand that our roots, you know, Boise's a nice place. We don't have the issues that Northern Idaho has. We don't have that big of a dark history. So, but we have to remember that a lot of these people are scared, you know, and we have to be all inclusive. So,
Mr. Coles?
I think the opportunity to work very closely with the school district. They open the schools up, partner with the school district, partner with teachers who have a vision for what is happening deeply into the community. And then I agree with taking the meetings out into the neighborhoods, and generally those meetings will be at schools, and people of all backgrounds are comfortable walking into a classroom, walking into a school, walking into the cafeteria. Their families are, they feel protected there. So I think that's one way in which we can open up city government to everyone.
Ms. McLean?
This is a great question. And there are a couple things that I would love to do and some things that I'm already doing as a city council member, but also as a candidate. First off, I've proposed, when I became president of city council, I proposed with Lane that we have town halls so we could actually move about the city to get into places beyond city hall so we can connect in different ways that are less contentious with the people throughout Boise. And that's been a great experience. I started listening sessions for the same reason, because I wanted to hear the stories of folks around the city and better understand what's happening in this community right now and how we can better serve everyone with decisions that we make and to inform a vision for the future of our city. As a council member, I've actually worked and talked with several organizations this year about the needs to have some sort of human rights committee or commission at the city, and that right now I'm looking at that as something that the city council could build out that would be reflective of the community at large and help inform us and when we make decision on the impacts of what some would call marginalized communities. And then I propose that as mayor, I build out the student leadership opportunities and move into student councils regionally to create more accessible access for reflective commissions throughout the community for students.
Ms. Nielsen?
I think it's an exciting opportunity for government to work with people and its citizens. For an example, my father working with the Tossie Swan and his neighborhood, everybody was so angry at the beginning, but then when they got to work together and the community gave the developer his ideas and they brainstormed, and it just was a wonderful collaboration and exciting opportunity to see everybody come together, and they helped design my dad's development. And I thought it was neat because they stood in front of City Hall and they were there on his behalf. And so to watch that people will be okay with change as long as they are heard. And I think that that's what people think government is lacking, is that they're not being heard.
Mr. Beter?
Well, I really think the premise of your question isn't correct, and I appreciate Adriel's comments about this. We have worked tirelessly to reach out to people all around the city. Since I was first elected, I've had Saturday office hours regularly, and I know people out there that have taken advantage of it. You could come in and spend 10 minutes, first come, first serve. Anybody can come. People fill the slots up all the time. We have Neighbors United, which is a refugee group. It's the longest running city-sponsored refugee group in the country. And we continue to make strides that way and listen to both agencies and refugees themselves and all the different providers. I meet with the business community. I meet with young professionals. I meet with our students through boards and commissions. We used to meet with every neighborhood association every year. We'd combine geographically the neighborhood associations until the city employees outnumbered the people that would show. So we're looking for other things. We do surveys every 2 years, and our people stay on the line for the survey more than any other city that this company helps us with, because people are so engaged. But people are busy. You got to get them where they are. You got to try to get to them in the easiest possible way. I'm really proud of what we've done. We can do more. We've experimented with daycare at city council meetings and other meetings. We've had the community conversations, which have engaged hundreds of people. We will continue to do that and look for even better ways. But we have a great track record of reaching out to our community, all across our community.
So we'll start with Mr. Martinez with this question. Boise's pledged to go clean energy or clean electricity by 2035. How might you help implement this plan, or would this be a priority for your administration?
Yeah, it's definitely something that needs to happen. The Conservation Voters Forum, I kind of talked about that. We only have, the way that things are going, global climate change is a real thing. I mean, if you've been to other parts of the world, it's we have to reverse the process somehow, or at least, give ourselves some time so we can maybe have a space mission to go to Mars or the moon or something, if things get that bad. But we have to understand that it's a tough thing to go 100%, and it's very possible, and other cities and countries have done it. And, like with the buses, you can do solar, you can do lines that run on top, and the buses are basically connected, stuff like that. the rail system, the city, the buildings, solar panels. There's a lot of energy efficient buildings downtown that developers are they're building currently. You can tell some of the buildings, some of the ways that the windows are done and other things so they can get natural light. So it has to get done. I would definitely set a shorter timeline to get it done as fast as I can, but I'd have to work with the city council. The mayor doesn't have authoritarian power, so.
Mr. Coles?
Clean energy is a great goal and certainly supportive of that. The one thing I ponder as we move towards clean energy and, again, support, but I ponder the 40 years that since I've become aware of the lack of our salmon runs in the state of Idaho. For 40 years, we've been told that barging and hatcheries would save the salmon in our state, and it is not working. So we rely a lot on hydropower. That's where a lot of our clean energy comes from. But look at the impact that's having on our salmon, our fisheries, and something that I think is very, very important to humanity, to our state, and I'm tired of being lied to about that.
Ms. McLean?
I do support the transition to 100% clean electricity. In fact, I helped lead that effort to set the goal as 2035, and I've said that as mayor, I would work to beat that goal. And people will say it's not affordable, and I'll ask, how can we afford not to do it? It impacts the cost of our power. It creates opportunity from an innovation perspective and economic development. As a city, I know that we can lead on this issue and so many more. Since City Council voted for 2035 in April, utilities have come out and said they're transitioning to clean electricity. Battery storage folks have come out and said it's going to be cheaper and we can do it sooner. This is something we have to do. I'm super excited about doing and know that it creates a path of opportunity from an economic development perspective for our community and for years and years to come.
Ms. Nielsen?
I'm passionate about Mother Earth, and I am passionate about clean air. As I stated earlier, advocating for statewide emissions tests, I think that we can all participate in cleaning our air. However, 2035 is a push. I did read Idaho Power's 2045, and I thought that seemed reasonable and realistic, and they are the leaders of sustainable and renewable energy, and I thought, you know what, that's something I can jump aboard on. But I think everything is positive. I think we all have the same plan, and that is take care of our planet. So I'm always looking at the positive side of everything.
Mr. Beter?
Well, we have a great track record of environmental sensitivity in the city of Boise, one of the best curbside recycling and composting programs, geothermal energy expanded. We have committed, rightly so. We also have a program to clean the river, the Dixie Drain Project, that makes it 25% cleaner, and it's a lower carbon footprint, and it's cheaper. So we have some real momentum going to this. I think we all need to take this very seriously. We all want to make serious strides in this area. You give me $1 billion, we'll be clean energy next week. But we don't have $1 billion. We have to have our eyes wide open on this. We want to move as aggressively as we can. But if we spike people's energy costs in a fragile situation already, we have homelessness and affordable issues. If we don't do that right, we could foul this up. We want to do the right thing, and we'll be as aggressive as we can. And we've shown a pattern of aggressiveness, but we need to make sure that it's affordable, that it's accessible, and we do it right.
Ms. Arnold?
Thank you. I do agree that clean energy is a great goal. I've heard a lot of talking about it at City Hall, but I haven't seen much action. I don't think we saw clean energy in the design of the grandiose library project. So I'm wondering how serious the city really is about that. I'm serious about it. I have 39 solar panels on my roof, and I love it. I'm wondering if anyone else up here actually has taken that step to move towards clean energy. But yes, I think it's a great goal.
All right, thank you. Mr. Coles, we'll start with you this time. Do you think Boise should have control of its own streets?
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, that's a great question. Certainly, you like to have control. Ada County Highway District was organized. I think Boise had control of their streets, but lost control. But going back in history, but Ada County Highway District, they generate the revenue. They do their best. I think I would applaud. In fact, I would indicate the maintenance of our streets. We don't have those dirty, bumpy roads. Our streets are clean. And I noticed, last summer, this area up through Orchard, I was very impressed that they were going back in, not just covering it, but they dug it up and they built a new orchard. So there's some really positive things. I think the opportunity and where any challenges that I would discuss with the Ada County Highway District is getting out in advance, purchasing the right-of-way properties well in advance of growth. But that must probably it's a funding issue.
Ms. McLean?
Any mayor, when thinking about the things that she would like to be able to make decisions on, would say she would like to make decisions on her streets. So yes, that would be lovely. However, we have a system that doesn't allow us to make decisions and have control of our streets. It's the Ada County Highway District was set up in the 70s. And as a leader of a city, we have to respect that and build the relationships necessary to be able to work together to solve the problems and make streets decisions. So while it'd be wonderful, and most cities do have the rights to make decisions on their streets, we don't right now. And so we have to work with the system that we have in productive ways for the citizens of Boise.
Ms. Nielsen?
I think it's the ACHD and the ITD have a beautiful job. They take care of our roads and highways. I do not think that it's the city's interest. I think that we have other things that we could put our time and energy on, and I think that it's wonderful. Moving forward, I think it would be wonderful to work together and have great plans and ideals and conversations. I think it starts with communication, ideally. I think that's been lost, but no, I don't think Boise needs to control the roads.
Mr. Beter?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Do you think cities should have control of their own streets, or do you think Boise should have control of its own streets?
Do I think cities should have City of Boise should have control of its own streets? Yes.
Okay. Ms. Arnold?
Boise had control of its streets. And if you want to see how well they did, just drive through areas in the North End where the roads are too narrow. There are issues at times with fire access. The drainage is terrible. Sidewalks are missing in a lot of places. So ACHD inherited a mess from the city of Boise. I think we have to respect the decision of the voters. The city didn't have some evil entity come in and wrestle control away from them. It was a choice made by the citizens of this county to put that responsibility under one umbrella, and it works. We do plan 20 years out. The dilemma with trying to get ahead of growth is that we base our plans on the city's comprehensive plans. Each city and the unincorporated county have a comprehensive plan. We base our planning on those comprehensive plans. What happens, though, is the cities decide to change those plans, or they decide, instead of 2 units per acre in this area, let's put in a 300-unit apartment complex. Well, of course, the highway district couldn't get ahead of that because it wasn't on the plan. So I think the current system does work, and it shouldn't change. We have to respect the decisions of our citizens.
Because I need to correct this record, because I've looked at it into it intensely, the city of Boise did not support giving control of our roads over. On the contrary, they voted no. The mayor adamantly opposed that, and he foresaw what was going to happen. We're going to have people outside the city making decisions about how our roads work. Countywide, of course they wanted it, because they could take, there were more citizens countywide than there were in the individual cities. The city of Meridian also opposed it. But they had the votes to take the money out of the urban areas and spend it in rural areas. And that's what happened. But for years, it acted more like a street department and less like we're going to tell you what you want. It doesn't work. We steal from each other all around the country. If you see an issue that works, if you see an approach that works, we take that. No one's ever taken this model, not anywhere in the country, for good reason. I mean, when people have a problem with a pothole, they call the mayor. When you are upset about your snow removal, you call the mayor. 1,000 of you called my office in Snowmageddon, and we have to tell you, call the Ada County Highway District, and they think we're passing the buck, and we're not. That's the system that we have. And then they called Ada County, and they got a recording. It's not the way to do it, folks. I'm not disparaging people. I'm not disparaging people. It's not the way to go.
I'm going to call foul. The mayor shouldn't get to come back in and answer after he'd already answered and turn this into a debate. And I might point out to you, Mayor Beter, that the mayor at the time came back later and said, you know, it was the right decision to change it to a countywide highway district. So perhaps you have been misinformed. But we do take care of the streets. Potholes are fixed within 24 hours of the time that they're reported.
Okay. Mr. Martinez?
They are.
Mr. Martinez?
Is there any ITD or CCDC people here? Let's just go all four of them. You know, all out brawl. It is more complicated, but yes, I say yes. I've lived in other cities like Cleveland, and they do a better job this city than what happened to Snowmageddon. So, no offense. But, you know, it's more than just the ACHD and Boise. There's the CCDC, you know, the Blue Streets, and the ITD is involved, and it's just too many government organizations messing with one issue. So I agree with the mayor on that. You know, if that would have been the case, then, you know, the Snowmageddon, they couldn't be blaming on each other. We just blame the mayor. So, but when you have one organization, you know, one government organization controlling something, it makes everything so much easier. So, yes, I do support the city taking over the roads.
Okay, we have time for one more question before we move into closing statements. So we'll start with Ms. McLean for this final question. What are the two most important issues that must be solved in the city by 2040, and how will you help work toward those?
Well, by 2040, we will have a region of about 1 million people. And so we're 20 years behind on transportation, and currently we're 10,000 homes short. So the two most pressing issues are housing and transit. And of course, that's connected to growth and our transition to clean energy and creating strong communities. And all these things are really integrated in so many ways. We've got to tackle affordability, making sure we have homes for everyone that lives in our city, and transportation from a regional perspective by walking away from the old grudges and building new relationships and a vision to do that. And in my first 4 years as mayor, I will work tirelessly to do that very thing, because we need more and better to get it done by 2040.
Ms. Nielsen?
Transportation and wages. The commuter train, we desperately need an in and out. As mayor, not only do you represent Boise, but you represent the people that commute in and out of here for work and play. And you want to see that they do so in a safe and timely manner. Wages, we don't want to be known as the poor place of Boise. We want to lift those wages up. We want people to pay for their own homes. It's so empowering to buy your own home because you can afford it. You don't need the government to take care of you. I'm so grateful for Dan Price at Gravity Payments for just being a leader and believing and knowing that empowering your employees only creates happier customers and better profits for you. So that's the future.
Mr. Beter?
Well, we have some agreement on this. I think affordable housing and good paying jobs and transportation are the most important issues that we face. I have great relationships across the valley. We meet every month with all the mayors and the county commissioners through the Treasure Valley Partnership. We talk about all these issues. You know, one of the things that cities resent is to go and tell them what they should spend their money on. This is tough, and we agree on transportation, but we agree that we need some other source. These cities are struggling just to keep their little bit that they contribute to Valley Regional Transit. I have those relationships. I built them over years. These are tough issues. You can't have it all ways. You got to build housing that people can't afford in order to have it. And we need a funding source for public transportation. I think we ought to have that now, let alone by 2040.
Ms. Arnold?
I think transportation is one of the most important issues that we have to solve, but it goes hand in hand with growth. And I think we have to have some stability in comprehensive plans so that we can plan a transportation system. We also have to have collaboration between the various cities and the county on growth and comprehensive planning. That has been a challenge because in the past that has been tried, and there were certain elected officials who wanted to control the process because they were the largest city, and it fell apart because the smaller cities felt like they weren't being heard. So I think collaboration on growth is going to be important, and it's going to be a key to planning a transportation system that works. I think to have collaboration, you have to have joint meetings. And ACHD has done that with every city. We've had better luck with every city except Boise. Quite often, Boise cancels those joint meetings at the last minute, or the mayor just doesn't show up.
Mr. Martinez?
Some of the issues everybody, you know, kind of talked on, but I'm just going to go one very specific, our local economy. We don't have the wages, we don't have the jobs to support this growth. We need better companies like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, even Amazon. You know, people want to hate on Amazon, but they pay $15 an hour. You can't feed yourself with benefits, you can't pay your rent with benefits, and you can't put gas in your car. So we have to understand that call centers are not the future. So this city, and if I was elected mayor, I would bring better companies here that could pay our people. My company, for instance, I work out at the airport at FedEx. You know, we're like 70% inbound. We have a plane sit over the weekend. We're losing money. We're costing the company money because we have nothing to send out. We don't have manufacturing jobs. We don't have the jobs. This is a retail-based economy. It's very weak and very susceptible to the next recession, which will happen sooner than later. And Boise will get worse than it is because of all the problems. And they've known about these problems for a long time. You know, this isn't something new for the government. So, you know, we had to focus on the jobs, number one.
Mr. Coles?
So Community House failed, but the building didn't go away. The Boise Rescue Mission uses that building, purchased that building, and it's a great facility for them. And Mr. Mayor, as I indicated, New Path is a great community effort, and you led that effort, and my compliments to you. Can you imagine in 2040 the traffic congestion? I'm almost overwhelmed today as I try and cross the river. We need more places to cross the river. We need a transit system. As many have indicated, we're woefully behind. So those are very significant issue, and we've got to work together, every organization, every governmental entity, including the state of Idaho and the federal government. But traffic congestion, of course, the impact that has on air quality, on our environment, on the stress that it causes in our life. We're growing awfully fast, and we're approaching a point where it's going to be very miserable unless we work together and get that done. And as mayor of the city of Boise, that would be a top priority.
All right. For closing statements, we'll go in the order that the candidates drew again. So Ms. McLean, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you. I can tell from the discussion tonight and the number of questions and actually the number of people that are here that, you know, we have serious challenges ahead of us. Boise of today has new challenges and a lot of new needs. We need new leadership to address these with a sense of urgency, leadership that's not bogged down by the politics of the past, that's ready and hopeful and wanting to work with people across this community to address these very real challenges that we're all experiencing. I'm optimistic. I'm really hopeful. I often say I'm bullish on Boise. I love this place. I cannot believe that Scott and I were as lucky as we were to find it when we did and to build a home here. And I know that our best days can be ahead of us if we have the courage to do hard things. The hard things, they're tough. That's the fun part when you lean in and you're willing and ready to do hard things. And I believe that together we can keep Boise a place where you can buy a home, you can build a life, you can seek the opportunity that you need to live here, and you can know that your kids and grandkids and theirs will be able to do the same. And if you're ready to share in that vision, to dig in with me in creating a future expecting more and better every day, then I'm asking you tonight to vote for me on November 5th. And it'd be with extreme humility and gratitude that I work with each of you to move our city forward.
Ms. Nielsen.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. This was a lot of fun. And I think if elected, I come in with a clean slate and a little bit naive, but willing to mend relationships, optimism, collaboration. Definitely, I don't have all the answers, so I look for information. I want to learn and I want to embrace. So thank you again for everybody, the women's, the Boise City Club. However you decide to vote, please vote November 5th.
Mr. Beter.
Well, we're all going to thank the League of Women Voters, and I will as well. And we're all going to say it's been so much fun, and we're almost going to mean that to all of you. It has been a great night, and like I said when we started, my daughter represents the fourth generation of my family that's lived here. It is it's the greatest honor that I've ever had to serve as your mayor, and I treat it like an honor every single day. But what you understand here tonight is you can't have everything. You can't say, well, I want affordable housing, but I don't want to approve housing developments. I want a new library, but if it's hard, then I don't want a new library. I want transit, but I won't go do the work to get the option to raise funds here. You know, I want not to have to litigate a case to the Supreme Court about homeless camping, but I want to help the homeless. It's just not that way, folks. This job is tough. You need to make tough decisions. I believe I've shown that I can make those for the long-term best interests of the city, for my daughter and her kids, and for your kids and their kids. And that's what this job is about. I'd like to keep doing it. I think I've shown that I can. There are even tougher decisions coming in the future. I'm equipped and ready to make those, and we'll turn a great city into an even better city.
Ms. Arnold.
Thank you. And thank you to the League of Women Voters and City Club for having this forum. And thank you all for being here. I'm very excited to see this level of participation. And I'm excited about the future. I'm excited about changing the way Boise does business so that it's open and transparent and people feel like they're being heard. People feel like they have access to City Hall and they have access to their elected officials. I know that I'm a public servant, and I remember that every day. That's why I publish my cell phone number. It's published in the newspaper every week. It's on our website, because my view is the people I serve should be able to reach me without jumping through a bunch of hoops. So if you want to talk about where we're going in the future, I'm happy to take those calls. My cell number is 208-841-2530. And I hope that I will have your support on November 5th. Thank you very much.
Mr. Martinez.
So this has been pretty fun, a lot better than the one 4 years ago. There are a lot more people, so people definitely are pretty excited about this election. And hopefully the turnout isn't as abysmal as it's been since I've been a registered voter. So Boise needs to set something new, a cornerstone for the future, and we have a political machine running the city. So I want everyone here to Google Tammany Hall, New York. And I hate to say that, but like I said, I'm a historian, and history repeats itself. You know, let's look at the presidential stuff. But We have a problem right now. The citizens are not being as involved as they should. The election turnout is low, meaning these elected officials have not really been elected by the majority of the electorate. So this is why everything's happening. There's a reason why. This isn't just, you know, mysteriously happen. And so I've known about this for a long time, and I've been out there in the community. I don't hang out with the same people they hang out with. I hang out with normal people who live around here. So I'm a benchy, and I like the rest of the city. I go, you know, Hyde Park. I'm a Packers fan. There's a Packers bar over there, and I enjoy it. And I enjoy other parts of the city. But we need to get the whole city involved. And if we don't, it's going to be the same old. You know, the status quo is, unfortunately, if certain people get elected, it's going to be the same old. And I'm giving you a warning, you know. So I hope that everybody votes November 5th. There's a live debate tomorrow. Don't forget, 4 o'clock, Channel 2. It's going to be awesome. So,
Mr. Coles?
I think one of the things we try to do, of course, as candidates is to distinguish ourselves. What are our positions? We want to be clear. I want to be clear to you that city planning and comprehensive planning would be one of the number one issues. We would have a comprehensive planner as director of our planning department. To distinguish myself, I just want you to know I just didn't just enter the race. I went to the budget hearing. I took the time to be there and to testify and to take a position on the library, the excessive spending in so many areas. I've taken the time to walk the petitions so that we could have the opportunity to vote on those large projects. I've taken the time to contemplate how we could reduce taxes. And of course, one of those areas is to reduce spending. The other is to not take the 3% year after year after year. The other is to go up to the legislature and support an increase in the homeowner's exemption. And why do we do that? So we can reduce homelessness. You can stay in your homes. And that would be my goal as mayor. And I do appreciate the opportunity to be here this evening. Thank you very much. And I humbly ask for your vote.
I want to thank you all for your excellent questions. There were so many. We couldn't get to many of them, but thank you. On behalf of the League of Women Voters and the City Club of Boise, we thank you all for your time and encourage you to be an informed voter. And please join me in thanking the candidates for coming this evening.